I want to welcome to Radio Gorgeous Nadia Narain and Katya Narain Phillips, authors of Self-Care for the Real World. And I want to say that Kate Moss and Reese Witherspoon are huge fans of the book. And for many of us, I think the self-help movement became another way to judge and punish ourselves. And how do we break that cycle and turn that into self-care? Welcome, Nadia and Katya.
Hi. I think what we've gone through the whole gamut of the New Age spectrum, and we noticed that we were doing good things, but we're still kind of punishing ourselves mentally, whether that was with juice fasting and being very strict about the food that we were eating or our practices that we were doing, and actually not having much joy in it all. And so I think we've come to an age where certain things are important to have in place, but we think it's also really important to just be a little bit kinder to yourself or ourselves.
And
yeah, having a balance is what's so important. Like Nadia said, you know, we've been rigid and we've done that. And, you know, I've had a raw food cafe and now I eat everything. And it's much more fun, you know, to just be kind and gentle. It's about being gentle and graceful with your life.
And what were the lessons that brought you to that? Because now that you're a model, you're now a yoga teacher. What were the sort of, I mean, you guys are younger than I am. I'm 50.
Not much younger, darling. Only a few
years. It's coming
years.
Up fast.
It's coming up mighty fast.
That sign in your window, things are closer than they appear. I think for those reasons, for me, that's one of the things that made me very interested in your book, is that I've noticed, you know, the stuff that you could get away with when you were younger, going out all the time and yet still taking care of work full time and running around. Now you just can't. And the stress of putting yourself under that pressure sort of makes everything impossible. So what kind of things led you guys to really focus on this aspect, as opposed to, as you said, you were doing some of the extreme things and cutting out sugar and only raw food? And
I think it's all a natural evolution too. And you also find as you get older, you have different priorities, and going out every night certainly isn't a priority. And being in bed, this is going to sound weird, like the most boring people on earth, but being in bed at 10:30 with a really good book, it brings me great joy.
I'm with you.
I was going to say, I have, so at my cafe, I have lots of young girls that work for me, you know, in their 20s to 30s and stuff. And, you know, I can see when, you know, one of them's upset about something and how they're going to react and go out and do all of that stuff. And I always just try and say, look, why don't you just have some time to take care of yourself? Like, instead of going out for the second night in a row and getting drunk, just get home, watch a movie with your girlfriend, have a bath, and just see how you feel. And they always say to me, like, oh, I felt so much better. Thank you so much. You know, so, and it's because, you know, we've done that and we've partied hard and we know now.
Well, it's also an idea of what we, because the first hurdle is to not think of self-care as selfishness.
Yeah.
That's kind of the first hurdle. And then we are taught, you know, we look at celebrities, you know, spilling out of limos, and we're supposed to, you know, glamorize that lifestyle. So we're thinking of that as rewarding ourselves. That, you know, and so we have to sort of really, it's a change in perception. And tell me a little bit about how we sort of rethink.
We think that self-care is definitely a mindset, and it is like treating yourself as you would your kid or your best friend. And it feels like, I mean, we're certainly guilty of this. I would be so much kinder to one of my yoga students going through something than I would be to myself going through. I'm like, you idiot, why do you feel this way, you know, and be really, really hard on ourselves. And so just taking this time to be, just gentler and kinder, you realize that actually it's the complete opposite of selfish. It's very self-full, for lack of a better word. You fill yourself up, and then with that you have more actually to give other people. So the more tired you are, the more stressed you are, the more run down you are, actually the more self-obsessed you become. It's funny, my son, he was reading that chapter last night, and he said to me, you know, Mum, how do you stop yourself with the bad thoughts about yourself? And I said, well, the first step is what you've just done. You've become aware of it. So have the awareness first, and then when you start saying those things about yourself, say, oh, here I go again, I'm doing it, you know, and change the language. So it's a constant conversation that you're having with yourself, but being aware first that you're doing it is the first step.
I would say, because that is a very difficult cycle to get out of, and self-acceptance and forgiveness. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? And I think, because I think that's one of the things that's hardest, because they're old habits. It's a lot of information. We didn't just come to that. We didn't wake up one day and think, oh, I can't do that. And, you know, all the negative thoughts, oh, I always do that. Those didn't come, you know, fully formed just one day. That's an accumulative effect of many years of telling ourselves that, and many years of feeling insecure or having body issues, etc.
Or many years of people telling you that, depending on how you've been brought up. I think awareness, again, like understanding. So, I think it's only recently that I've realized that a lot of my negative patterns were things that were said to me as a child, and how I was brought up, and maybe not as nurtured as how I would nurture my kids, and going, okay, so this isn't me. This is something that was told to me, and this isn't the truth. So I have to work on this now and tell a different story to myself.
And I think that women also have a tendency to find their faults and to focus on those faults all the time. Like, we look in the mirror and we go, oh, my ass is big, and what's happening to my belly? And actually, maybe stopping and looking in the mirror and appreciating what your body does for you every single day is quite an amazing feat. And so again, just changing that tape, and, you know, it
doesn't happen overnight, and it's constant practice. Constant conversation you have with yourself. But, you know, when you change it, you feel good. Just like, you know, when you exercise, I don't know if you do this, but when I exercise, I can look in the mirror and suddenly I feel like I look like, what's her name? Christy Turlington. You know, just because I did something that felt good for myself. So when you do the small things and you make the small steps, you're going to feel better, and you're going to watch those things grow. And that's why our tips are simple and small, so they're easy to add into your life.
Okay, so let's talk about some of those tips. One of the things that you guys talk about quite a bit is massage. So talk to me about the importance of massage and what it can do for you.
Well, that's your department. Katia was a body worker for years.
I'm a sucker for massage. I love it. I loved giving it. I love receiving it. I can't always afford it. And when I can't afford it, I've taught my kids how to do it for me. Or, you know, we have self-massage tips. And, I mean, I think it's so important. Touch is so important. And to be touched is so healing. And I think it's important to touch yourself in that way, so you know your body and you know how you're feeling and you're checking in. And it's also just loving. It's love. It's amazing to be touched.
One of the things you talked about was dry skin brushing. Tell me about that a little bit.
It's good for your lymphatic system. And I remember my mum doing it when we were young, and it was all about the cellulite. And then I started to research a little bit more about it. And it's just so good for the lymphatic system. So it just helps to drain the lymphatic system. And it literally takes a minute. And you can do it before you get in the shower or in the bath. But you can also just do it and then rub oil on your body. And it makes your skin feel good. It's really good for dry skin. But mainly it's good for the lymphatic system and the immune system.
So again, small things.
Super small.
But over time, helping you do more of those things as opposed to more of the things that don't feed your body, feed your soul.
Well, we waste so much time now on social media and on the internet, Googling everything. And, you know, we were just talking about this earlier, how it's a new phenomena for us. And when we were at school, you couldn't Google things. You had to look in a book and look it up, and it would take time, and there was a whole process around it. And now there's a good and a bad to having those things. And sometimes when we're feeling a little low, we're feeling a little weak and not so disciplined, we can go down the rabbit hole of just spending an hour. You've lost an hour just doing social media, looking at other people's lives and not dry brushing and self-massaging. Cooking yourself a nice meal, because suddenly you've just sat there from 7 till 9 looking at this rubbish.
Or read something inspirational that makes you feel good.
You, Nadia, you do meditation. Katya, you emphatically don't.
In other ways, different practice, yeah.
So tell me about how you practice meditation and what it does for you.
I got into it through yoga, but then I got very seriously into a Buddhist practice of meditation, and I loved it because I literally sat for 10 days in complete silence and realized I was a mental patient. My mind was insane. And when you sit quietly, you get to see the crazy that goes on in there all day long. And that was my first kind of wake-up call to how important this practice was. And it's not always easy to be consistent with it. But certainly in the last, I would say, 10 years, I've been super consistent with it. And even if it's just 10 or 20 minutes in the morning, I always feel so much better with my day. And it's a checking in. It's a noticing, because we have a tendency to believe our thoughts. And some of those thoughts are not real, you know. And just to check in and allow some space between the thoughts, just be a little quiet, a little calm. And there's so many huge benefits that are scientifically proven. It's not just, you know, hippie mumbo jumbo now. But the benefits are just so far outweighing the 10, 15 minutes that you sit and do it.
And do you find that that helps you be less reactive, not only to your own negative thoughts, but other things, other stresses that are going on?
I mean, we're both quite, for lack of passionate. We're both quite fiery women. And so there's a little misconception about us that we're like super calm and chilled. And we kind of are when it's not our problems. It's always easier to be calm when it's someone else's issues. But we get super stressed, and Katya's kids drive her crazy sometimes. You know, two boys are super intense, and certain things upset me. But it is a practice of learning to respond rather than react to situations and taking time. And, you know, I have a tendency that I'll get an email, I have to reply straight back to it, especially when I'm angry. Those are the best ones. And actually learning with age, no, they're not. You know, take a minute, take a breath, go for a walk, do something, and then just noticing how your attitude towards that situation completely changes. And you haven't caused a fight or a war. You know, much like, I won't mention his name, but his Twitter account, how he just reacts constantly, and it frightens people. And so just to take a little bit of time and to be able to respond.
That's definitely a rule of life, isn't it? To don't react, take a walk, have some time, breathe, get back to it the next day.
It's not always easy. I mean, we know that.
It's not easy.
Yeah. I was going to say, does this come up between the two of you?
We remind each other. Yeah. I mean, we don't have that much friction, but if something upsets one of us, we'll usually tell the other person, and then the other person will say, okay, don't reply back to that. Take a deep breath. So we're quite good with each other to remind each other.
Mm. And why is social media, and I think it's sort of an adjunct to it, in particular, why is reality TV, why do you consider it so toxic for us?
I don't really watch reality TV either. But, I mean, the social media, I think it's the comparison, you know, with the Instagram and, oh, look at her life, oh, look what she's got, oh, my God, that's amazing, you know. We don't know what's going on, and people are putting their best moments on it. And it's so easy to just feel crap about yourself when you're looking at it. So, we're on it. We love it. We use it, you know, for our business, for ourselves. We also put our best moments on, but we also watch who we follow. Notice when we're following someone, how does that make us feel when we see it? If it feels terrible, we don't follow it. So we try and follow people that are inspiring us, that are uplifting us, that we enjoy their stories rather than just that, you know, constant feed of stuff, and just notice how you're feeling with it.
And so, because it's very difficult in all aspects of your life. At the school gates, you know, there's comparison.
Yeah.
At, you know, old friends, what everyone from uni is doing and what you're not doing or what you're doing. And feeling even the need to brag about what you're doing. Like, where's that coming from? And that constant comparison. But it is difficult. I mean, we're social beings. It's called social media for a reason. Mm. We're social beings. We like to see each other. We like to see what each other's doing. We like to have interest in each other's lives. How do you balance that? And how do you balance that? You know, you are promoting a book now, and you have celebrity clients. Like, usually one assumes you're at the behest
of other people. No, I mean, I just got lucky. I started teaching a very long time ago at a time where there were hardly any yoga teachers, let alone young ones. And we grew up together. They weren't celebrities of that caliber when I was teaching them. We went along together. But I guess with the book, it's been really, really hard because we've had to stay on top of it to a certain point, and we've had to, you know, it's part of our job is to publicize it and to get people interested. But at the same time, we're trying to be disciplined with it and we're checking in with it. And it's not easy. You know, it's a very fast addiction. You know, it's like as quick as picking up a cigarette and then suddenly you're smoking a pack a day. So just being super, super aware of it. And I was just speaking to a friend the other day and she's like, you know, I've come off social media. I've just stopped my account. And I was like, oh, I'd love to do that. But I can't right now because we've got the book out. And I only have a very limited amount of people that I follow. And it has nothing to do with being a snob or not wanting to. It's total self-preservation because of my own lack of discipline.
Also, both of our social media accounts also show our weaknesses as opposed to just like, oh, look at me, I'm on holiday here. You know, obviously there's some of that, but we allow ourselves to be very vulnerable to help people as well, to be like, you know, this is how we feel today. It really sucks. And this happened to so-and-so. And, you know, we try and inspire and connect, and actually it's with those feeds that we get the most interaction with. Oh yes, that's how I felt today. What did you do about it? You know, I did something about when winter came and seasonal depression, and you know, so many people are like, I have that too, you know, and that's such a good point, you know, I'm gonna try that. And that's where, you know, both of our accounts are very much like that, so we try and
another thing we've got, and another thing that we've gotten back about the book is that it doesn't feel patronizing. And that was something that was really important to us when we were writing it, that we had to keep checking in with people, that it didn't sound like this, go and have a $1,000 massage and a smoothie and a Lululemon legging and your life is going to be amazing, because we know it doesn't work like that. So it was really important that it was authentic to us and what we've gone through and what we've done, and hopefully that it helps other people. And the nice thing about social media is when you know you don't always have access to the people that are buying your books or your DVDs or whatever it is, and all of a sudden we're getting emails from mothers whose kids are suffering from anxiety and depression at 14, 15 years old, which we suffered from, and they're like turning it all around because they just read the chapter on, and it moves us to tears, you know. So there's good and bad, but our generation is the generation that's learning to deal with it. So it's probably the hardest for us because there's a false illusion of like likes and friends, and you know. And I sidestepped Facebook. I never did it. But I enjoyed Instagram because it was images and it was staying in touch with my friends that lived, you know, and again, watching that change. So, you know, it's like anything, got to stay on top of it.
Okay, here's one last question before I want to get into the organization of the book itself. At one point you mentioned, you know, don't pretend to be anything other than yourselves. And then there's confidence building, which... on one hand, I mean, it sounds to me like you kind of have to outsmart yourself and you kind of have to sidestep yourself. Because, yes, be realistic about who you are, but also you're trying to accentuate your positive aspects and forgive your, you know, your weaknesses, your mistakes, whatever. Talk to me a little bit about that process, because that's very difficult. And again, yeah. It takes,
so,
you know, a lot of monitoring.
For me... this whole process with the book has been terrifying. I don't do talking in groups. I don't do interviews. I don't do radio, videos, any of that. It's been completely terrifying for me. And that is part of me. So what I've had to do is I got a life coach who helped me a lot. And I just had to do it, you know, and the more and more I've done it, the easier and easier it's become, and the prouder and prouder of myself I've become. And it's opened me up in so many ways that I'm like, wow, I can really do this now. It's amazing. Like, I was, how
yeah,
terrified.
So proud of
I was awful, wasn't I? I was
no,
a wreck.
Now
anxiety.
She's the one that I go, you go and do that interview, because actually I've been doing this for so many years, talking to groups of people, but I almost kind of wing it a little bit, whereas she's doing the research and really knowing, choosing her words so carefully. But I mean, we grew up in an environment where we weren't how do we explain it in a nice way, where we weren't particularly uplifted, or we weren't made to feel great about ourselves, let's put it kindly. And so we have this natural kind of negative bias that goes on in our own brains, where, like you said, oh, you teach all these people, you're top of your game. I don't feel like it at all. I'm constantly going, someone's going to find me out, you know, or are we qualified to even write this book? And, you know, so all this stuff is constantly going on in our heads. And we, certainly with me, I'm self-deprecation is kind of my humor, and I like being like that and I find it funny. But it's, if you really listen to what you're saying about yourself, it's fucking mean. It's just mean. It's cruel. And you wouldn't say that to your friend. So just checking in on yourself and noticing how you talk about yourself. But I think that certainly, no offense, because you're American and I don't mean it in a horrible way, but you know, the American women have a tendency to be very confident in a way that sometimes I look at them and I'm like, I don't really buy it, you know. So it's just being as true to yourself as you possibly can without being mean to yourself, but at the same time, you know, force yourself to do things that are difficult, like what Kati is doing, and also a little sweetness and a little humble pie is nice, you know, because then you feel, I feel like when I meet women that are vulnerable, those are the women that I want to talk to. And when I meet women that just go on and on about all the great things that they do, I'm like, okay, what else? Yeah, what's going on in there, you know? So it's a constant practice. It's a constant practice.
Okay, so how did the book come about? And I also want to talk a little bit about the organization of the book and what it includes to entice people to delve in. It's in different chapters, love, hope, peace, joy, and light. And they all incorporate recipes as well. So tell me a little bit about how it all came about and how it came to be shaped in this way.
Well, we have been working together for the last few years. I teach yoga, and Katia obviously has her cafe but was doing body work. So we started to notice when we did a retreat that it wasn't just about yoga. You know, it was finding all these different aspects that were helping people, whether that was just like, listen to what you're saying to yourself. And so these are things that we've been practicing and teaching ourselves. And then love, peace, hope, and joy, and light were words that I've used in my own brand. I have a brand of candles that go by those words. And our editor decided that that was a nice way to line the book up, and that there were some, I think peace is one of my favorite, peace and hope are actually my two favorite chapters, because they're not necessarily positive in the sense that they're about going through hard times, and these are the times that we need to be kind and caring to ourselves.
Excellent. And tell me about some of the recipes that are in the book.
I just tried to do simple recipes. Not all the recipes made it into the book. There was meant to be, what was it, 30?
Yeah, there were 30 recipes.
But then when they photographed the recipes and, you know, they cut some. So probably it wasn't my favorite 15 recipes that went in. But just simple, easy food to make at home. You know, just trying to make it as simple as possible and tasty and as nutritious as possible.
And mood boosting. Because there's a lot of things in there. A lot of those ingredients are ingredients that boost mood, that help maintain mood.
Balance
yeah. And help sleep, which is...
Yeah.
I find that the most challenging.
And also when you don't feel like taking care of yourself, that's probably one of the things that goes out the window the fastest, is what you eat. So I'm not a cook and I don't enjoy cooking. I'm a real grazer. And so for me, it was really important that Katia didn't get too complicated technical, because that's easy for her. But I always feel like as soon as there's more than a few ingredients, I'm like, I don't want to cook that anymore. And I think when you are learning self-care, food is probably one of the most important things.
I was saying, because one of the things you say in the book that, and I think these recipes that are included are very helpful in, is being able to prepare them in advance and have them to hand.
Yeah. You know, that's key, isn't it, for everyone, is just to be able to, you know, marinate this and keep it in the fridge and then stick it in the oven the next day. You know, but also what we say in the book is, you look at your week as a whole and think, okay, look, so tonight I'm home, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm not. So if I do, you know, maybe two dishes prepped, then on those, you know, on Friday, it's just easy rather than just causing a lot of crazy. It's all about organizing, making lists, looking at everything as a whole and seeing where you can steal pockets of time to help yourself.
And what are your top three tips if you have 10 minutes and you want to help yourself not hurt yourself? Top tips.
Top tips in 10 minutes. Well, we've got lots of 5-minute tips in the book.
Yes.
To a song.
Yeah, that would 10 minutes. You could have two or three of your favorite songs, put them on first thing in the morning and just go for it, because that always puts you in a really, really good mood.
Yeah.
10 minute meditation always, you know, balances me out a little bit.
Going in for a quick walk, breathing fresh air.
That's three.
Fantastic. Nadia and Katia, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. The book is Self-Care for the Real World. Kate Moss says she's giving it to everyone. Go get your copy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.